The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today, Thursday, April 19th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal right now to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Tomorrow we got our first hour-long podcast. That's right, we'll have a 58-minute podcast for you tomorrow on 420. We're featuring some of the editors and writers at High Times magazine. Miss High Times will be on the program as well. We'll speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll check in with Keith Strupp. It's going to be a huge activism day right here on the Audio Stash for 420. Also, if you have waited and waited and waited to join Normal, to actually become a card-carrying member of the largest organization promoting the reform of marijuana laws in the country with over 140 local chapters, don't wait another minute. Tomorrow on 420, there will be a special promotion where there's going to be a huge drop in the membership fee. We want people to join today. We want you to have your voice heard for marijuana law reform. So if you've always waited to join Normal, don't wait another minute. Do it today. Do it tomorrow, especially on 420. A friend of mine yesterday said, you know, they should make Normal piggy banks, and that's not a bad idea. Every time you go out and purchase some marijuana, put a dollar in the Normal piggy bank and then send it in to the foundation. Make your tithe out there. Don't just give one out to the gods or plant a seed or anything like that. Make sure you plant the seed of reform in America by joining Normal right now. So I am very much looking forward to our 420 podcast tomorrow. Make sure you tell all your friends to tune in. It is going to be the best audio coming out on 420. I guarantee it. We'll also have some special 420 giveaways here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. So get ready to get involved. We're going to celebrate and get active right along with you. And we'll have some very, very cool Normal giveaways on 420 tomorrow. Also, tonight, check out Normal's eBay auctions. We have some very special 420 auctions going up tonight. Get involved any way you can. Most importantly, join Normal and help us end marijuana prohibition. There's no better day to do it than on 420 tomorrow. Today on the program, we've got our feature interview with Ed Rosenthal. We've also got some great music for you today as well. So stay tuned right here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. This is The Growing Truth About Cannabis.
What's up, guys? This is Miss High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Today on the Audio Stash, our feature interview is with Ed Rosenthal, the legendary publisher, author, and cannabis cultivation specialist. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome him here to the Audio Stash today. Ed, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
It is wonderful to speak with you today, Ed. Now, first, let's talk about your legal case. If you could give us an update on what's happening there.
You know that I was originally convicted of three charges, and they were cultivating marijuana, maintaining a place where marijuana is cultivated, and conspiracy to cultivate. And originally, as I said, I was found guilty, and then the appeals court overturned it because one of the jurors had felt intimidated, and so the appeals court said that I could be retried. But what the prosecutor did was he started a new grand jury, and there were 11 superseding indictments. And they were sort of ridiculous indictments. There were four money laundering charges that totaled $1,853. And then there were five charges of filing false income tax returns, but they did not claim that I was cheating the government or that I had underpaid my income taxes. So those charges only carry a penalty if the government has been cheated. So I would have been found guilty of felonies, but there would have been no charges. And we put in motions of a vindictive prosecution, and the judge, in a very unusual decision, found that indeed it was. And so he removed all of those financial charges. And that was the first time that a prosecutor had been found to have had a vindictive prosecution in 10 years in the Ninth Circuit. Then, this was about 3 weeks ago, and then about 2 days later, there was another hearing, and the judge gave the prosecutor a time out, and he asked the prosecutor and the government some very pointed questions, such as, why are you pursuing this case, and what's the purpose of it? Does it serve any purpose? Is it a waste of your and the government and the court's time?
And Ed, is there a broader picture to this legal case, or is this just about targeting you specifically?
I don't think it's just that. This is really a case about whether the federal government is going to go after the medical marijuana dispensaries in California, and whether they're going to go after it in a concerted way. And while they have been picking off one or two dispensaries over the past few months, usually it's a rip and run. That is, they come in, they take the material, and then they leave, and then the dispensary reopens. And they have not tried to indict many people recently, and I think they're really waiting on my case. So it's really a tipping point case. And it's been very well played up in the media here, and we have a very sympathetic, we get very sympathetic reviews of it, because it just seems like vindictiveness, as well as that they're going after patients and caregivers. And my case, in the public's eye, is tied up with the Raich case, in which the Supreme Court said that a patient isn't entitled to get their medicine.
And a lot of folks around the country view all of California as being open to medical marijuana access, but we've seen some counties like San Diego usher in the federal agents and raid dispensaries, so not all of California is upholding the law there now.
You know, there's a very big push by the Narcotics Police Officers Association, as well as other criminal justice organizations, to stop Prop 215 one way or another. And the reason is simple. It's a jobs issue. And marijuana prohibition is a $30 billion a year jobs issue for them. It's about 5% of the entire criminal justice budget, if not more. And so any crack in the dike is to be immediately patched up. And they've been losing on this, and it makes both the police in many areas and the prosecutors really vindictive. Why, even in San Francisco, which has not only medical ordinances, but also resolutions declaring the policy of the city to be lowest priority, the district attorney there still brings many cases from many marijuana cases, and it's simply a jobs issue. And the police and the whole criminal justice system has not been reined in. And even the judges, when Prop 215 was first passed, even the judges ignored it and tried to say that it wasn't law, even though the California Supreme Court had said it was. And there has been tremendous resistance throughout by the criminal justice system. You know how the police used to say, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them, and if you change the law, then we won't have to do this? Well, that has been proved, that has been shown not to be so. They, the criminal justice system, are the ones who are trying to keep these laws intact. And it's the only portion of society that is pro-marijuana law.
Now, we've highlighted the racial disparity of marijuana enforcement across the country, but prohibition really does affect everyone of every color out there, doesn't it?
I think it might have started as a racist law, but I think it's an equal opportunity method for police to arrest people. And although they, in some areas they might concentrate racially, I think the idea of it is it's a good way to keep arrests up and keep prisons filled. And they don't really care whether it's white, black, you know, or any other race. They just want to arrest people. See, there are two reasons why the police are so adamant about, and the entire criminal justice system is so adamant about marijuana. And the first, of course, is that it's a jobs issue. And the second is that it's the only illegal drug, aside perhaps from some psychedelics, which aren't really used that much, but it's the only commonly used drug which does not cause dysfunction. And, you know, people who use heroin or cocaine or amphetamines or even some legal drugs, alcohol and tobacco, they might be dysfunctional or suffer consequences for it. So, you know, the idea you've had that of a karma, that you've had your fun, now you should suffer for having fun. So, but with marijuana, the police see people who are functional, who are having a good time, and who it's not hurting. And so they get really upset that there is not a consequence to the use of this.
So this is really about a broader issue of civil rights, you know, something that goes to the core of American freedom.
Right. Well, part of the problem is that the whole idea that any time that you're having fun, that there should be a consequence to it. And it's also, I think part of it also is that the criminal justice system, and especially when you're dealing on the street level, that is with the police, they are out of touch with the realities of the mores and mores of society in the United States in the 21st century. They're still living in a 19th century paradigm. And until we change both the laws and the recruiting system, we're going to get police who basically don't approve of society and think that society has gone wrong and that they are the moral protectors.
And a lot of editorialists and journalists across the country have been calling prohibition the other failed war. You know, do you think that our foreign policy is somewhat shining a light on this issue and has some parallels as well?
You know, the United States supplied the Taliban with $45 million in aid for stopping production of opium. And the reason why the Taliban had stopped the production of opium is that they wanted the price to rise because they had purchased the opium and then they could release it at a much higher price. So who's aiding the Taliban? You know, it's still happening at this point. We're still getting a lot of stuff that's a lot of information that the United States the United States government has actually aided all the smugglers, and they're still doing it, and they do it on a political basis. We had the whole scandal of the coke epidemic in Los Angeles as a direct result of DEA policy, DEA and FBI and CIA policies. So, you know, that's just another excuse that they're using. You see, the party of a discussion who sets the definitions, then has to win the discussion. And right now, what the police do and what, you know, antis do try to focus on any potential harms that marijuana has or any disruption of society from marijuana. And instead, I think that the real discussion is why the police are refusing to, why the police and the criminal justice system are refusing to accept the reality that Americans have basically accepted marijuana, and why are they being so disruptive in this? And also, another part of that would be, you know, the answer to that is it's follow the money, that this is, that they don't want to lose that $30 billion a year that they get paid for prohibition. And I think that's where the argument really should be. It should not be a discussion of whether marijuana is good or bad for society. That's already been decided.
And what do those prisons gain by having all of these marijuana offenders?
You know, prisoners are put to work very often working for private companies, and then they're paid well below minimum wages, sometimes pennies an hour. And think about this. Who would you rather have as a worker, you know, showing up for prison work? Some marijuana person who, you know, is pretty functional, or some, you know, a violent person, or, you know, or a person who was a drug addict or something, you know, had other negative aspects. No, they get a much higher quality prison worker if they have marijuana prisoners. So there's a real incentive to get these people into prison.
Ed, New Mexico became the 12th state to authorize medical marijuana access, and they have a unique method built into the law there where only certified nonprofits can cultivate the medical cannabis. You know, tell us what you think of that.
Well, I agree with that. I think they should do that, and I think what they should do is expand that to the whole pharmaceutical industry.
So medical marijuana could be a real catalyst here to get all pharmaceuticals provided on a nonprofit basis.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I think that we should take over Merck and, you know, all those other companies and make them nonprofits. And I think it's a great idea. It's unfortunate that it started with marijuana, but I think that it is a good idea and we should expand it.
Also, though, in a society as we live in it today and the reality of the influence and power of Big Pharma, do you think that the California dispensaries are being held up to a higher standard right now than Merck or Pfizer, asking that this particular medication be not for profit?
Well, you know, the other difference between Merck and Pfizer, and I specifically brought those up, is because of Celebrex and Vioxx. And, you know, if the criminal justice types wanted to really go after some vicious criminals, they would go after them. And let me explain. You know that when the companies were researching these painkillers, Vioxx and Celebrex, the rodents suffered from heart conditions from it. And then when they did the trials in humans, participants suffered damage from that, and it was hidden both times. And then those products were put out on the market, and patients started suffering heart attacks from it, and they hid it. And they hid it for 6 years, and a total of a minimum of 50,000 people died in the United States from this. I mean, these are mass murderers. Really, you have a mass murderers who were doing it solely for profit and for gain, and that they knew that these people were going to die from it because it was really a tainted product that they hid from government agencies, and 50,000 people died from it. And meanwhile, the people who perpetrated this, the CEO and, you know, other people in those kinds of positions in these pharmaceutical companies are reaping the benefits of their golden parachutes or whatever, making hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars a year from it. And it's about time that the criminal justice industry started bringing these people to jail, the mass murderers. And, for instance, in San Francisco, with a population of about 800,000, approximately 200 people died from Vioxx or Celebrex. I mean, so if they're so, if these criminal justice people are so worried about drug kingpins and, you know, all of that, yeah, they have it right there. And, boy, the confiscations could be great. And then we could have those run as, you know, the government could take over those companies and run them as nonprofits. Hey, so, I mean, I'm all in favor of those marijuana clubs being nonprofits, but I just think it's such a great idea that I think let's do it for all medical care in the United States.
Indeed. We would certainly see a vast change for the better in this country. I certainly agree with that. Ed, you know, you've passed on the knowledge surrounding marijuana cultivation for many years with your books and High Times with your column, even on the radio there in Los Angeles. So when people are out seeking your advice, what is the most common question you get?
Well, how to tell a male from a female.
So what also, you know, what were some of the standout questions you've had from folks over the years as well?
Well, the one that I think aroused the most emotion in me was some guy said that he found like these marijuana weeds growing in a patch in the forest, so he harvested them. And, you know, obviously he stole somebody's patch. So that I mean, I thought that was pretty outrageous. But, more than outrageous, I really find the best questions are the ones I can't answer at once, and so that I have to do research. And that has actually, I'm probably the guy who's learned the most from these columns because I've had to do all this research from all these interesting questions that people have asked. And it's drawn me to totally new places. For instance, in the past year, I've been studying terpenes, and these are the odor molecules and also flavonoids, which are the flavor molecules that cannabis has, and how they affect the high. And that was all from a two-sentence question from somebody, and as I got into it and tried to answer it, I realized the implications of it were much greater than I had ever thought. So it led me into a whole new area of study.
That is very interesting, Ed. You know, I have to ask, is it possible to grow marijuana that doesn't have the telltale odors associated with it?
Yes, it can. But I think that what will happen, but I mean, first of all, there are marijuanas that are much more pungent than others. But my findings show that, well, first of all, you know how people like me, and you know, was oft repeated, would say that the reason why marijuana has different highs, different marijuanas have different highs, is because of the different recipe of cannabinoids that are in them. And so, you know, the CBD and CBL, CBN, and the THC all interact with each other. And, you know, so, well, there are only two things wrong with that theory. One is that they found that CBD does not react to the CB1 receptor. That's the part, those are the ones that are found in the brain and which affect, which actually create the high. And so that cannabidiol does not affect the high. And then the other thing is that if you look at most varieties of modern marijuana, they have a spike just at THC, but they have very little of the other cannabinoids, either CBD, CBN, CBL. So then there must be another reason why different marijuanas give you different highs, and that's mainly in the terpenes. And so that, so those are the odor molecules. So that when you get a marijuana that doesn't have much odor, you're getting more of a pure THC high. And then the different odors have different effects. For instance, without getting too detailed, I could say this with a pretty good surety, that if you smell the marijuana that has sort of a black peppery odor, that will give you a high that's very focused and where you have a high degree of acuity. You know, it's it would be good for problem solving, for instance, or, you know, when you're trying to figure something out. And then if you get a smell of marijuana that has an odor much like lily of the valley, those terpenes will put you to sleep or make you a couch potato for the day. And also there's almost all marijuana contains a terpene called myrcene. And myrcene is, you could look it up, Google it, and but it's used a lot in making flavor, in odor, making commercial odors, and also it can be manipulated in a lot of ways to make different odors. But one of the properties that myrcene has is that it goes through the blood-brain barrier really quickly, and, you know, it pierces that, and it takes THC with it. So that marijuana with a high amount of myrcene in it will get you much higher than the same marijuana without the myrcene in it.
Huh.
And so that's what I've been studying for the last 6 months, Ed.
That is fascinating, Ed. You know, I know it's difficult to get the different cannabinoid levels in marijuana investigated and looked at, but is it somewhat easier to look at those flavor and odor molecules in the plant?
Well, the only reason why it's tough is that it's illegal, you know, I can't go to a lab, for instance, let's say I wanted to analyze a soil sample, I'd go to a soil lab, and they give me an analysis, and, you know, it's just a business transaction. But the government interferes with marijuana, and so labs aren't allowed to do that kind of, either they can't do that work or they can't do it for a private party. So that's what makes it difficult. But as far as terpenes and the flavonoids are concerned, there's no restrictions on lab work on that.
Huh. And for medical patients, Ed, is it very difficult for a single patient to grow their own medical-grade cannabis?
It really depends on the patient and what the patient's condition is, and also if they have the energy and the space to do it. But in terms of growing marijuana, it can be done pretty easily, you know, there are a lot of books out on it. I've written some books on it for the home grower, closet cultivator, and easy marijuana gardening, and it does not have to be complicated. And I think it's better if people have had experience, already have had experience cultivating, you know, a garden or house plants. But it's as easy as growing other plants.
Ed, this has truly been a fascinating discussion here today. I really appreciate it, and I cannot wait to have you back on the program here very soon.
Oh, I'd happy to be back.
Ed Rosenthal joined us here today on the Audio Stash. He's the legendary publisher, author, and cannabis cultivation specialist. We have links to websites associated with Ed on our homepage today at normalaudiostash.com. HighTimes.com.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Next up on the Audio Stash today, we got some great music from a Normal Legal Committee member, Ben Scales. Here's the song he sent us to use. We haven't played it since January, but it's perfect for today with our feature interview with Ed Rosenthal and leading into 420. Here's Ben Scales, Growing Marijuana in My Yard.
I call this my Coming Out of the Closet song. I'm not at all ashamed to say that I'm growing marijuana in my yard. Growing marijuana in my yard. I got little pots of pot spread out all over the lot, 'cause I'm growing marijuana in my yard. Well, I got the seed from Mexico, stuck it in some dirt and let it grow. Put it in my garden with my peppers and my peas, and I get all the smoke I need for free, 'cause I'm growing marijuana in my yard. Growing marijuana in my yard. We keep it where no one can see, so let's keep this between you and me. But I'm growing marijuana in my yard, 'cause I'm growing marijuana in my yard. But I can't tell my boss or I'll get far. I don't grow much, just what I use. I work all day, and when I'm through, I smoke some marijuana from my yard. Yeah. Now the policeman, he wants to talk to me. He says, how you gonna smoke up all that weed? He says, money's what you're in it for. Don't you know we're in a war? Now I'm gonna haul your ass downtown with me. And I said, hey man, what is it to you? How do I infringe on what you do? Well, I beg your pardon if you're offended by my garden. I just can't grow Prozac in my yard, so I grow my own medicine in my yard. I give some to my neighbor for his heart. I share it with my grandma, who keeps it from her son, 'cause we all know that stuff's against the law. Well, now there's nothing growing in my yard, 'cause the cops took all my land, both my cars. Now I have to buy my pot from a teenager in a parking lot who's growing marijuana in his yard. Oh, anyone can grow it in their yard. Hey, I can show you how, it ain't hard. Never mind the president, let's overgrow the government, and I'll grow marijuana in our yard. Let's grow some marijuana.
That was Ben Scales, a member of the Normal Legal Committee, here with that very apropos song here today. We have links to Ben if you want to find out more about his music up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. And make sure to tell everyone you know to tune into the Audio Stash tomorrow. We'll have some writers and editors of High Times Magazine, Miss High Times, Keith Strupp. It's going to be an amazing 420 show full of music and guests right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.